we start today's episode, just to let you know, you can now nominate for the 2025 Northern Power Women Awards to be in with a chance of celebrating with changemakers, trailblazers and advocates on the 6th of March 2025. Nominate now at wearepower.net.
Power Women Podcast. For your career and your life, no matter what business you're in.
Hello, hello and welcome to the Northern Power Women Podcast. My name is Simone and this is the Path to Power season. And every week I am talking to some of the most amazing change makers and trailblazers who are really making a difference in and from their communities by challenging the norm and creating the more inclusive cultures that we all know are so critical to accelerate gender equality from the North. And there's so much to learn from every single one of my guests. I get all of the inspiration, I get all of the top tips, and I feel like it's just a personal one-to-one coaching session for me often, but I love it. I love having these chats, and this week is no different. I'm delighted to introduce to you Rebecca Loyes, the Diversity and Inclusion Partner at National Museums Liverpool. Rebecca, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you so much for having me, Simone. It's such an honour to be here.
Oh, and you know, it was great to see you at the celebration event a few weeks ago. Great to get people in a room. You know, we were chatting. I was, you know, the conversations that we have sometimes before we press record, I think always really interesting. And to get people together, you know, I know COVID, the pandemic, lockdown was, where are we, 3 years ago. But you talk about, you know, you, a lot of what you do, you love bringing people together through the events, through the hospitality events, your hospitality business. Tell us just about National Museums Liverpool, because there's tons of them.
Yeah, so National Museums Liverpool has seven sites, actually. So they've all got their own separate names, so you might not recognise the National Museums Liverpool tag, but it's the International Slavery Museum, the Maritime Museum, the Museum of Liverpool. We also have the World Museum, the Walker Art Gallery, Lady Lever Art Gallery, and Sudley House. So there are seven sites. So the majority of them are in the city centre, sort of the waterfront, which, you know, just, I'm so lucky I get to work in great locations. And then of course Lady Lever across the water and Sudley House favour in the south of Liverpool.
So I've not been to those last two, so there you go, they'll be on my list now for my summer in the city and across. So, but I know you have this massive passion to empower people and, you know, to believe in, achieve their potential. Where did that come from?
Gosh, I feel like I sort of grew up with it, right? I suppose it's from your own internal journey and your own internal struggles and what you want to overcome within yourself. You can recognize it so much more easily in others when you see it in yourself, I suppose. And so when you've had someone come along and empower you and that sort of, you know, lit your path and enabled you to kind of accelerate and push on, you want to do the same for others when you see them at the same milestones that you saw yourself at. And so I think that's where it came from for me. My mum is just an incredible woman and a really encouraging character to me as well. She's completely blind, visually impaired, and has been since she was 17. My dad is also. And yeah, they met at a school for the blind. Very cute story. But for them, to see both of them live their life having to overcome struggles and having to, you know, a lot of the time navigate the barriers that people had, or, you know, the perceptions that people had of them, and assert that they are not other people's perception and that they can do more than people believe them to do. And to see them both walk that journey, I suppose, also is a massive motivator for me.
Absolutely. Do not underestimate. I think sometimes people like to, you know, put labels on and assume, make assumptions. And, you know, you talked about power then, you know, we talk about this being our pathway to power and using your power for good. And I know you're very much, again, someone who likes to do things on purpose and with real purpose. And how does having that purpose in what you do affect the way that you approach your career? And actually not just your career, but everything else that you're involved with.
Yeah, I think when you believe in a specific goal, it can really take you somewhere. And especially when you find people, I think it's so incredible when you're surrounded by good people who cheerlead you on in your goals and perhaps will join you for the journey. So for example, the charity work that I do, I fully believe that the disease sickle cell, I believe I can see that in this lifetime become a curable disease. There's been one or two cases where it's been cured, but there just needs more money and awareness around it. And it's actually the largest genetic disease in the UK. And so what I found is that I had this vision of I'm going to start some events and I'm going to raise money through live music events. And people kind of join me in that journey. And, you know, they believe authenticity, you know. And when you're coming from that place of authenticity, hope, and you really know that there's something about that purpose and that you can achieve something, people can believe in that and join you in that and are willing to travel along that road with you.
And this is personal to you, isn't it? Because you sadly lost your sister. I can't imagine how you must have. What age was she when you lost her?
She was 35, so the age I am now, which is just mind-boggling. It's a crazy story as well, because she's born with sickle cell disease, which is a genetic disease, and there's different variants of it. You can have be a carrier, be minor, or you can have like full blown. So she had full blown and she'd managed it all her life. And I probably would say that I didn't realize how serious it was. You know, I'd seen her go into hospital and knew the pain that she suffered, but I didn't think that what did happen would happen. And it was, again, in COVID, where there's just, you know, the doctors are busier than usual. She couldn't go to the specialists that she usually goes to. She'd had a fall, so it was naturally, you know, that she'd had, you know, an attack of sickle cell. She'd had a fall, but she's more susceptible to blood clots because she's got sickle cell. And so it's that gap of understanding between the specialists and between the rest of workers in our medical services. And so she'd been given blood thinners, but instead of having a scan, she'd been given a second x-ray for the fall. So on the day that she was due to have a scan, she got an x-ray, and then they'd rebooked the scan for Monday, and then on Sunday the blood clot went into her heart. And so it's difficult to take, because it's kind of like the circumstances of it. But for me, the best thing I can do is take all of that energy, which is, you know, it's grief, it's despair, it's, you know, intolerable pain. And I can turn that into, you know, I can switch that despair for hope. And I can switch that pain, which will always be there, but you can have joy instead of just being in intolerable grief. And you can do it through making a difference for others. And so when we're all in that room, and, you know, so the events so far have been, there's been two wonderful jazz events, which is just so fun. You can get glammed up, wear lovely outfits and listen to beautiful music. And there's also been another live music event, which had like various different artists. But when everyone's in the room for a common cause, but at the same time, you know, you're just buying a ticket and then you're being entertained. You're having this wonderful evening of entertainment, but you know all of it is going to go towards making a difference. It's just incredible.
Tell us where you can find out more information about what you're doing and your fundraising and your. Have you got a date for your next event?
No, I think so. At the moment, because we were kind of at the start, we kind of did them sporadically, but we're looking to have one in the winter. I would say at the moment, just watch out for my LinkedIn, and I will definitely post something on there. But I think we're going to perhaps develop it into a proper website specifically about the things that we're doing. I think we've made that decision now, myself. And then I've got my partner in Thrive instead of partner in crime, Hayley Kincaid. And she's an incredible musician and vocalist in her own right. And so we kind of cover each other's gaps. I'm the kind of get everyone together and what should we do? Let's do this. And then she's got all of that technical skill. So, we're probably going to put something properly together now at that stage.
And the power of that, bringing people together to educate, to remove that desperate despair and replace that with that hope. I think that's who you are, isn't it? And using that gift of, like you say, I love the fact that you cover each other the way you talked about yourself and Hayley then, and, you know, bringing that music into it. And that music is so important, isn't it? You know, tell me about the work that you do with the gospel choir.
Yeah, so again, that's another thing that Hayley and I do together. So we started that, gosh, it must be 8 years old now, seven towards 8 years old. And it was just literally, we just wanted something in the community, just something to bring people together. And we just thought we need something. And again, Hayley's a vocal coach, and she was doing some choirs, and she had a recovery choir at the time. And there's unfortunately been a bit of decline in the recovery choir. And I said, well, it looks like you're going to have a space open. I think we could really get something going here. And so we started the choir. And again, I was sort of doing the admin bits, and Hayley was delivering the choir itself. And it's just grew and grew. And it's so lovely to see, you know, people who were there 8 years ago still there. So it's not that we do get new members all the time, and sometimes people move on, leave the city, whatever, but we've still got this nucleus of people who've been there from the very beginning, and it really has become a family. And, you know, sometimes we do weddings, sometimes you'll see us at various events, and it literally is about spreading joy. It's a sort of open to anyone. It's not specifically faith-based, although there are multiple faiths who are in the choir, but it's just about bringing joy through, you know, uplifting music. And it really does make a difference to everyone there. And wherever we go, we absolutely love it.
And it's that transformative nature that music brings, isn't it? So you talk about what you're doing around your fundraising for in your sister's memory, what you do around the gospel choir, that music can just, you can see it in people's eyes, can't you, when you see that music come to play or bringing that choir together. You know, that motivates you on, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it was quite interesting. I was at an event in through work at University College London, and it was thinking about how, you know, about statues and how some of the statues were being pulled down after around Black Lives Matter, and thinking about how we remember in the UK. And it was really interesting. One of the women there was talking about, you know, the importance of creativity to social activism. And actually, I think it's really true that a lot of the time when we're trying to instill an important message, sometimes we might want to do it directly through particular words, a lecture, you know, a serious conversation. But actually, there are so many channels to get across important messages. And I think music, it captures people, you know, and I think it's one of the best ways to do it.
Absolutely. It's like just literally brings people together. Talk to me about what led you to volunteer over in Brazil at one of the largest favelas over there.
Yeah. So it was part of my PhD, actually. I'm at the very end now. I'm just waiting for my viva. But basically, my PhD was it's about social activism, and it's about oppression and how social activists perceive oppression. And I did half of the study in Liverpool 8. But one of the key people who I read and who I base the work off is an educational philosopher called Paulo Freire, and he was Brazilian. And some of his writings challenged me so much that I sort of thought, I'm never going to understand this without understanding his context. And so I made this decision quite early on that I wanted to do research over in Brazil. And so I went over there to carry out that research. But yeah, what ended up happening is I just made friends who happened to be from Hacienda, which is, yeah, largest favela in Rio. And yeah, I would just be there so often. And there was an NGO there that taught English, and I had some experiences teaching English as a foreign language. So I volunteered, and I'd just be there a couple of times a week. And I must say, they are the most incredible places, and they are, you know, it's a completely different world to ours. You'll find it's quite interesting. Like, I'm from Liverpool 8, from Toxteth, and some of the things in the favela you'd never see in Liverpool 8, sort of like, you know, people have got their own, you know, you'll see all the biggest banks in the country in the favela. But at the same time, you don't have proper sewage systems and proper water systems. So it's really kind of, you know, two opposite things happening at the same time. And, you know, you'll see there's jobs that in our country, you know, are quite, you know, jobs that would have you in quite a comfortable position, sort of electricians, plumbers. They're kind of jobs that in Brazil you end up in a favela. So it's not necessarily kind of our perception of people in poverty, but at the same time, there is absolute poverty and absolute struggle. Yeah, and I found it so friendly, so welcoming, and it definitely changed my life being over there.
What did you bring back into Liverpool 8? What did you bring back into Liverpool with you?
I think I brought back a more confident version of myself. Because to go over there, I had to do so many things I didn't think I could do. I had to learn Portuguese, which is a really tough language to learn. And I think what I discovered as well about, you know, one of the things about learning a language is, you know, for me, I was always quite okay at school and I kind of understood things quite quickly. But with a language, there's nowhere to hide. If you forget something, you just forget something. And so you're constantly having to make mistakes. And that was really tough for me. So just every day walking around, making mistakes and people correcting me all day long. And then to sort of embrace that and sort of be okay with actually the only way to grow and develop is through embracing the fact that you're going to make mistakes. And I think that's definitely something that you can bring into, you know, your career trajectory and your development path. You know, instead of making it into a big deal, just being like, okay, let's pivot, let's move forward. So definitely brought that back. Gosh, so much. Just I think a happier attitude towards life as well, just joy. Brazilians are so joyful. And you know, they do have tough circumstances. It is tough, but they're sort of, it's really interesting. They will say themselves, the way that you recognize a Brazilian is the smile on the face, because they're always smiling. They're always laughing. They always sort of, yeah, it's bad, but what can we do other than laugh? You know, they really do center joy. And so I think that's definitely something that I brought back as well.
Yeah, well, that's where you just have, it's that hope, isn't it? That eternal hope, isn't it? And positivity that I think just radiates out of you. And, you know, and you've worked such a lot around, you know, when you work around your consulting in relation to diversity and inclusion. Sometimes I feel we're going forwards. Sometimes I think we're going backwards to coming forwards. What are the kind of big changes that you've seen over the last sort of 4 years or so since you've been, you know, working across this?
I think the biggest change is hearts that are willing to listen. And I think that's the most important thing. And I think it's actually where sometimes I enter spaces where I don't necessarily, if I'm giving a talk, I don't necessarily feel like I have that in the room. And so to understand that that's what I need to do, I need to first of all get to the place where I've got hearts that are open to listen before I really get into the message of what I want to say. That's always what I aim to bring. So if I'm in a room that seems quite close, sometimes I walk into a room and people have just got their arms crossed and they're very much like defensive. And so to sort of convey a message of, you know, we're all in this together. We're all on a growth journey. We're all having to deal with, you know, be it internalized racism or misogyny or whatever it is. There's, you know, we're under the shadow of the biggest empire that ever existed. There's going to be inherent legacies that all of us have to kind of undo a bit. And it's not, you know, it's not about pointing fingers and saying who's wrong and who's right. It's about that collective understanding that actually in our heart of hearts, the majority of us want to just be good people and get along. But the way to do that is by questioning a few things within ourselves so that we're not unconsciously causing harm to others. And so, yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is that there are more open hearts than perhaps there were at other times. I think as well, there's been a massive development in language. People are able to use more language, which acutely and specifically attends to the experience they have. There's been, there's so many more people writing. And so that really helps as well, is that there's now these experiences that people can really name and go, ah, that's what it is. It was a microaggression, or, you know, that's what it was. It felt like this. And, you know, these having that a richer literacy around experiences for diverse peoples is just, it really helps. It really helps to be able to convey messages for change.
And it's funny you talked about learning Portuguese and constantly sort of repeating, constantly making mistakes. I think that's, it just occurred to me, that's, you know, you talked about open hearts, you talked about the language. It's, people have used the wrong language or been fearful of using language for years because they're like, oh, I don't want to say that out loud. That's not quite right. You know, and so therefore sometimes won't say anything. So I think there's something really in that language. Finally. And what's next for you? Your PhD, volunteering, charity, gathering, music, you know, consultancy. What's next for you? What should we look out for?
Oh, I think I'm really interested, of course, you know, primarily thing is what I'm doing at the museums and seeing growth happen in the diversity inclusion work and the strategy there. So I just want to continue ploughing efforts to create a platform of sort of, you know, a foundational basis of, you know, hopefully what will be a department, you know, a full on big department, which can influence all the different sites and that can really just create that new culture where the language is normalized. You know, I feel like diversity and inclusion needs to be like pizza. You know, we think of pizza as English as anything, but, you know, it's Italian, you know, when it becomes that normal. So that's what I want to do in the museums. I think consultancy seems to be growing and growing, particularly with the end of my studies. I see myself writing. I see myself doing more events and really growing in the consultancy side of things. I wrote a lot about representation, belonging and shame as part of my thesis. And I think they're such important areas. And so to build it into museum practice, but also to be able to write about it and get more information out there for everybody, I think it's going to be one of the next big things. Yeah.
Keep an eye on Rebecca's LinkedIn profile, because this is an amazing woman. We said at the start, every week I'm talking to fantastic trailblazers, people who are literally shifting and changing and driving the culture change. Rebecca, it's been an absolute joy to have you on this week's podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Simone. It's been incredible.
Oh, and thank all of you for listening. Isn't it amazing every week, these conversations, you know, those sort of, the talk about language of the day, the talk about hope, the talk about, you know, sort of that open heart. It's, you know, I always go away. I say, these are my one-to-one personal coaching sessions. But, you know, I love these weekly episodes. So please do subscribe so you don't miss an episode, as we are on our pathway to power and power for good. If you'd like to join us on this mission of professional and personal development, then please do stay connected on everything that we're doing is on our digital hub, wearepower.net. And please do leave a review, get in touch on all of our socials at North Power Women on Twitter and Northern Power Women on all the others. Thank you so much for joining us. My name's Simone. This is the Northern Power Women podcast, a What Goes On Media production.